Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting of the Ways and Means Committee to order for the 21st. We do have a quorum present. Representative Agbaje, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and so moved.
Agbaje moves that the minutes be approved. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed by the same sign. Thank you, members. Next, we are going to, before we dive into the ag bill, just like to spend a couple of minutes just kind of reviewing process as we move forward this session. You may note already that we have co-chairs at the testifiers table. It's my intention, and I believe the intention of my co-chair, that co-chairs present these bills in tandem so that we get both sides of the story, so to speak. We are entering kind of a new phase of the legislative session. As these bills come to the Ways and Means Committee, there's been an agreement in the background as to which bills will be Senate files and which bills will be House files. Today, this ag bill has been designated as a House file, so we will be passing this out of committee and on to the floor. Other bills that have designated to be Senate files, we'll hear the bills, we'll take comments on the bills, but they will be laid over until the Senate files arrive from the other side of the building, and then we will amend our language onto the Senate file, and the Senate file then will move on out of the Ways and Means Committee. There are a few examples of bills that will be combined. We're doing that so that we line up with the Senate for conference committees, because their structure of committees is slightly different than the House structure, and so we'll do the best we can to match up by merging bills together, and we'll do that here in this committee. That is kind of the basic process. We have a lot of Ways and Means time ahead of us in the next week and a half or so, so please make sure you're paying attention to the schedule and that you are prepared to be fully engaged in our committee work. This is work we've never done in quite this way before. We are tied and we have co-chairs, and so it's a bit of an experiment, but I expect it's going to go extremely well. So thank you all for your work up to this point, and just note that we have a lot of work ahead of us in the Ways and Means Committee. Co-Chair Stevenson, would you care to add anything at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think you said it well.
All right. We will be trading the gavel from meeting to meeting, so the next meeting, Chair Stevenson will be in charge, and we'll go back and forth as we have been doing prior to this. The first bill before us today is House File 2446, the Omnibus Ag Budget Bill. Welcome, Chair Anderson and Chair Hansen, to the Ways and Means Committee. We look forward to hearing from both of you on this bill. But first, I will move that House File 2446 come before the Ways and Means Committee, and the motion is that it will be placed on the General Register. We do have three amendments to the bill. Chair Anderson, as chief author, would you like to start with amendments that are coming forward? Which amendment do you want to start with, Chair Anderson?
We have three amendments to offer to the committee today. None of them, we feel, are controversial. Two are technical in nature, and one just makes a clarifying language on a provision.
And which one would you like to start with? I'm sorry.
We'll start with the A4 amendment, Mr. Chair.
I would move the A4 amendment to before the committee to be adopted to the bill. Please go ahead and explain the amendment. And if you need any help from nonpartisan, please ask them to join in.
Chair, yes, I would like to call on nonpartisan staff to go through these first couple of amendments. They were given to us by nonpartisan staff to technical in nature, and they can walk through what transfers are in this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Nonpartisan, who? Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the A4 amendments, what this is doing is it's establishing a transfer, kind of a hold on funds. So Because we treat transfers and appropriations differently, this would direct MMB to set aside money for a transfer for the years 2028 through 2031. So it's kind of technical in nature, but it is also establishing a way of doing this that works in accordance with our budget rules.
Thank you. Any questions regarding the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A4 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
For those opposed, A4 is adopted. Thank you. Next, Chair Anderson, which amendment would you like to address next?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Again, I'll move the A6 amendment before the committee. And would you like to explain this yourself, or do you want help?
Let staff explain this.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Again, we'll turn to nonpartisan staff to explain the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For this amendment, my understanding is that we were just missing the reference for where the money was being transferred from, so this includes the language suggesting that it's transferred from the general fund so that it's clear where the money is coming from.
Thank you. Any questions from members regarding the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A6 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A6 is adopted. Finally, we have the A5 amendment. I'll move it before the committee. And Chair Anderson, would you care to comment on this one?
We'll let Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen, talk about this one, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A5 amendment is a GOP amendment that we support. It relates, as you know, that in the ag budget, there's also the jurisdiction for broadband. We have a broadband study grant in there, and what this amendment does is it clarifies that the grant process would be in a competitive bid process. So the RFP would be a competitive bid, and we support the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Any questions from members regarding the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A5 amendment is adopted. I believe that concludes the amendments to the Ag Bill and Broadband Bill today. Chairs, would you care to give us a review of the bill?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And members, agriculture usually is the least partisan, and I think we showed that again this year. We had a nice target thanks to leadership, and we kind of divvied that money up. Each of us had our priorities and our concerns, and then the money kind of in the middle we used for ideas and topics that we both had shared feelings on, shared opinions. On our side of the aisle, Mr. Chair, it was my priority that we fully fund the Board of Animal Health with the situation facing turkey and chicken producers, and also moving into the dairy industry of talking about H5N1 flu. It was my committee's priority to fully fund the Board of Animal Health, and we've done that in this bill, Mr. Chair. We also said no to any fee increases from the department. They were looking to increase fees in a couple areas, food handler fees, and also in the grain inspection area. And in our bill, at least, no fee increases, as agriculture is facing some pretty difficult times coming up in the next year or so. And we thought this was not the time to increase fees on anybody associated with agriculture. We also have funding in this bill that would partially fund the situation in Litchfield with the First District Milk Processing Creamery. They are having some issues meeting some wastewater type situations, and in this bill there's $3 million to help with the upkeep of their system, the upgrading of their system to meet those requirements by the MPCA. Funding for farm to school, Chair Hansen can visit about that. We had funding for county ag inspectors, and also continued funding for E15 grants to move out the expansion of E88, which is cheaper and more octane for the motoring public, and also a new program, Mr. Chair. It's called the Biofertilizer Innovation and Efficiency Program, which to me is a proactive way for farmers to reduce some of their fertilizer inputs in return for getting a small stipend from the state, $5 to $10 an acre, for reducing fertilizer use by using what is termed a biologic in the world of ag, which is new scientific work and products that help make fertilizer more efficient. So those are the highlights from our side, Mr. Chair. I'll turn things over now to Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As Chair Anderson noted, we have had a positive target here of $17 million. That was divided between 5.3 for the GOP, 5.3 for the DFL, and then we would agree on the others. What the DFL side was looking at, we noted that there were cuts to programs for farm to school at the federal level and from the local food purchasing program. There's about an $18 million cut at the federal level. We are providing $4 million there out of the 5.3. We had referenced the broadband installation study earlier to look at locates. In addition, we had discussed the issue with sewage sludge and biofertilizer, so we are going to have a technical evaluation panel looking at that. Olmsted County has had a groundwater effort funded through the federal government, so we're going to look at effectiveness there prior to additional funding. And then for the farm down payment assistance, we provided additional money and then also increased the amount that folks could apply for from 15 to 20,000. Heritage oil seed to continue work with very basic old crops at the University of Minnesota. This was started in the previous biennium. And then ongoing money for the pollinator research protection account with a little bit of a bump in the first year. Finally, prion research looking at impacts of CWD prions in crops. So those were the general DFL provisions. The governor had proposed $4 million for emergency assistance for avian influenza. We had agreed that that was important. And so $2 million of that are unrestricted if there is an emergency. We also propose to do, if there is an emergency, retail testing for poultry or dairy products or pet food. And then if there is an emergency, that there would be money for farm workers to do biomonitoring and for in packing houses, whether they're poultry or other products. And so those are, again, we hope, and we've been lucky so far this spring on avian influenza, but if there is consequences that are coming, that we would be ready for those. Finally, we both agreed on the need for more meat inspection funds, and that was a priority to help with that, to make sure that we are providing a safe food. So two things just in general. We did not put any policy in this bill. There is a restricted use a pesticide issue that is in the bill because it has fiscal costs to it. We also did not provide any earmarks to nonprofits. We created two grant programs, an AgriWorks program for small grants and an AgriSupport program for larger grants. So traditionally, if you were here in prior years, you would see a number of earmarks for nonprofits. We have made those competitive grants per the chair's ways and means suggestion.
Thank you.
We'd stand for any questions.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Before we go to member questions, I'm going to bring Mr. Savory to the table to and Ms. Mollenbach to go over the spreadsheet. I'm going to ask them to, we don't need to go over every line, but a high-level overview of the spreadsheet at this point, and then we'll see if there's any member questions regarding the spreadsheet before we go back to the chairs for questions. Who would like to be first? Mr. Mollenbach, or Mr. Savory, I'm sorry.
Chair and members for the tape, Ken Savory, nonpartisan House Fiscal. I'll be taking you through the spreadsheet. The timestamp in the upper right is 4/16 of 2025 at 2:33 p.m. And I'll just go through the a variety of change items that are happening in the Ag Omnibus Bill. I'll just speak to the first grouping, which is starting on line 33, and the columns that refer to the first engrossment of the bill before you, are columns I through letter P on the right-hand side. So line 34 is the operating adjustment for the department of $1.3 million in FY26-27, and then approximately $1.8 million in the tails. There's an additional base appropriation on line 35 of $1.5 million in the upcoming biennium and in the tails for county ag inspectors. Line 36 and 37 are two reports regarding biosolid and sewage sludge, and also for the Olmsted County soil health program. They're both $100,000 each and one time. Line 39 is additional funding for the meat inspection program at the department. It's $1.7 million in FY26-27, and the same amount in the tails. And then in addition, on line 40, there's a one-time appropriation of $150,000 for restricted use pesticide plan updates. And then flipping the page to page number 3, there's one change item regarding promotion and marketing, which is $100,000 on line 95 for farm safety, health, and wellness. This appropriation occurs every year into the base at $100,000 each year. And additionally, just above that on line 94 is a cancellation of the green fertilizer production facilities program. It was a previous appropriation in a prior bill, but the reduction in this bill is $3 million. And then moving on to page 4, there are a number of changes to the Agri program. Line 141 is an increase of $2 million each biennium to the farm-to-school or farm-to-early care program. Then going down on lines 146 and 147 are appropriations to AgriWorks at $850,000 in this biennium and then $732,000 in the tails. And then on line 147 is the Agri-support program of $1,853,000 and then $1,730,000 in the tails. Additionally, the first engrossment also reduces the Dairy with an Eye program on line 148 by $500,000 in FY25. And then additionally, on line 149, there are new resources in the tails for the Livestock Protection Grant program for avian influenza of $450,000. And then moving to the administrative part of the bill. Flipping all the way to page number 6 is the other piece on line 208 of the operating adjustment for the department, $340,000 and then $406,000 in each biennium. Additionally, there are dollars for the Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council, or MALCEA, on line 209 of $300,000 each biennium. Then on line 217, there's a $100,000 appropriation for a study regarding the installation of broadband line. Line 218 is a $2 million biennial appropriation for the Local Food Purchasing Assistance Program. Line 219 and 220 are related to one another. Line 219 eliminates the Second Harvest Heartland appropriation, but then the milk portion of that appropriation is replaced on line 220 at $850,000 each fiscal year for milk grants. Moving down further, there's a reduction for the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation of a negative $25,000 a year. And then on line 223, there's a reduction of the Climate Implementation Coordinator of a negative $150,000 each fiscal year. Line 224 is the Farm Down Payment Assistance Grants Program. It's a $100,000 increase in this upcoming biennium and then $800,000 increase in the tails. And then on line 225, there's a $3.1 million appropriation only in the first year for the First District Association for Dairy Process Wastewater Assistance. And Chair and members, that wraps up the Department of Agriculture. I'll just point out a couple more change items regarding the two other agencies in the bill, which are the Board of Animal Health and AURI. Line 261 is a operating adjustment for the Board of Animal Health. It's $714,000 in 26 and 27, and then the same amount in 28 and 29. And And then flipping over the page to page number 8, line 281 is a $136,000 appropriation for an operating adjustment for the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, or AURI, and then it's $182,000 in the tails. You'll note on line 297 that the deed office of broadband remains unchanged from the base. And then starting on line 300, there's a variety of transfers that occur in the bill to various accounts in the Ag Fund or Special Revenue Fund. I'll just go over a few of the bigger changes, which are starting on line 329. And that is an increase in the tails to the Farm Business Management Program of $1.5 million. An adjustment to the base for agree in the tails of $542,000. And then an appropriation for on line 331 for prion research of $347,000 in the first year. On line 332, there's an increase of $53,000 for the pollinator research account. Line 333 is a transfer to the U of M for heritage oilseed research of $500,000 each biennium. And then lastly, on line 334, there's a $4 million transfer to the Ag Emergency Account from the General Fund. And that occurs only in the first year. And then, Chair and members, below you'll see on line 338, it's a summary of the General Fund impact of the bill. The committee had a $17 million target in both in 26 and 27, and then also regarding the tails. You'll see on line 345, in column L and P, that the appropriations or general fund impact for the bill are $17 million above the base. So the committee has exhausted the target of $17 million. And Chair and members, I would turn over to my colleague to cover the policy portion.
Thank you. Ms. Mullenbach.
Chair and members, my name is Megan Mullenbach, House Research. I'll be going through the policy article starting on page 33 of the bill. Section 1 increases the maximum individual grant award in the Farm Down Payment Assistance Program. Section 2 reorganizes the list of activities under the definition of application or use of a pesticide. Section 3 adds a new definition of handler for purposes of Section 4, and a handler is someone who mixes, loads, or transports a restricted-use pesticide under the supervision of a licensed applicator. And a handler also must meet a lower training and knowledge requirement threshold than licensed applicators. On page 34, Section 4 exempts handlers from the pesticide applicator license requirement. And Section 5, with Section 4, this change would require MDA to rewrite and resubmit their certification plan with the EPA. And Section 5 establishes the Biofertilizer Innovation and Efficiency Program to provide per acre payments to farmers to reduce their application of commercial nitrogen fertilizers.
Thank you. Any questions for staff at this point on either the spreadsheet or the policy language in the bill? Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I read with interest a letter that I received from you and Chair Stevenson together on April 1st, I think, that refers to a March 26th letter from Chair Robbins and Representative Pinto, who are the chair and DFL lead, respectively, on the House Fraud Committee. And what the letter says is that writing to chairs, directing us to avoid direct appropriations to private entities, and instead, if we were planning to give money to private entities, to run them through a competitive grant process. So then I see this dairy processing wastewater assistant to First District Association, which is a $3.1 million direct appropriation to a private entity, from what I understand. I guess your letter was a suggestion maybe, but this, to my thinking, does not align with that guidance that I received from the sort of the fiscal chairs in the House. And so I'm wondering why this is a direct appropriation and not a competitive grant.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I think I will take that myself. This issue was part of the negotiations to get this bill to move forward, and it was agreement between Chair Stevenson and myself on instructing the chairs of the Ag Committee to put this item in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that you can understand that if you are asking us as a body, which I think is appropriate, to look at direct appropriations to private entities in a certain way, that we would expect our leaders to do that too. And, you know, I've seen only the highlight reels of Chair Rarick in her committees busting out her 990s for various nonprofit entities. And there's, and Ginny's brought one out. Chair Cleborn has brought out a 990. I like to look at 990s myself, actually, because they're actually full of really interesting and important information about private entities. They tell you where the money comes from, where the money goes. They tell you about the compensation of executives associated with those entities that are required to file 990s. Of course, if you're filing a 990, it means that you already have received tax-exempt status from the IRS, which means that there's at least been some check that you are an institute of public charity. And, you know, so we have these institutes of public charity under the IRS code. They're required to make annual filings with the IRS. So we know all that information. We know about their money. We know where it comes from. We know where it goes. We know who gets paid what. Now, for a private entity, however sympathetic they may be, however much you want to help them, there is no such transparency for the public to know where their money is going. There is no such transparency for any private entity. And, you know, I'll just tell you, in the tax code, we give away hundreds of millions of dollars in corporate tax giveaways to entities about which we have very little information, unless they're a publicly traded company, in which case they do make filings with the FEC, I think, or which one? SEC. Sorry, I get them confused. So I'm just curious about this, because I just tried to Google. I can't find very much information about them. But this is an entity that has tens of millions of dollars of annual revenue. Like, why didn't we set up a competitive process? Could these are, I would assume, there's a lot of private corporations that would like millions of public dollars to improve their wastewater facilities, as they've been ordered to do by the MPCA. So what's so special about this one that they get a direct appropriation, unlike a nonprofit, you know, trying to get potentially tens of thousands of dollars, or we do larger allocations to nonprofits. But I mean, this is a large chunk of money going to a private entity about which we know nothing. I have no idea how much the CEO of this place makes. I know how much the CEO of Second Harvest Heartland makes, and we all kind of are sort of outraged by that. Why would a place that has a CEO making many times what the salary of the governor get public dollars? And yet here we are. Millions of dollars, no competitive process, to a private entity about which we have almost no information. So, you know, I personally think that it is a problem that we have basically privatized and outsourced government functions to nonprofits, that it creates issues. It creates problems, and we see it especially in the Medicaid space, but we see it in a lot of different spaces. And, you know, I'll tell you, as somebody who fights every day for the government to, like, make investments to improve people's lives, it really pisses me off when people misuse those funds. And so, you know, people who are worried about fraud in public programs can count me as an ally in that. However, the hypocrisy of, on the one hand, you know, putting forward all of this concern about non-competitive direct appropriations to nonprofit entities, while with the other hand, we're doling out the public money to for-profit and private entities. I mean, it's just the height of hypocrisy to me. And I do not understand how this aligns with the guidance that we've been given as chairs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak very briefly to clarify one point, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to do this about this letter that you and I signed. And I just want to be clear that Chair Gomez referred to it as an instruction, and I wouldn't call it an instruction. I would say that we were offering our opinion about an issue. We were not directing chairs that they had to do something. We were encouraging chairs to review the work that Representatives Robbins and Pinto, and my understanding is that letter was signed by every member of that committee. And you do see, I think, some of that work reflected in this bill. It's my understanding that this bill does change some longstanding direct appropriations to private entities into a competitive grant process. Chair Gomez, your point about this one entity is well taken. You know, we are a divided legislature, and there's going to be a lot of negotiation and a lot of compromise, and we're going to be in a situation where we can't make the perfect the enemy of the good, and we're not always going to be able to do things exactly the way that perhaps we would if one party or the other were in complete control. But mostly I just wanted to speak to make clear that it's not my intention, at least, and I certainly let my colleague speak for himself, to say that it was an instruction to chairs. And if bills come through this committee with direct appropriations to private entities, it's certainly not my intention to revisit that in this committee. It was more of an expression for support for the work of our colleagues and not an instruction or a direction.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Would either of the committee chairs care to comment on this issue? You don't have to, but.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. Valid point. Although this has been on the radar to alleviate this problem at this processing plant for a number of years, and this association serves farmers in 56 counties in Minnesota. That's 56 out of our 87 counties. And dairy processing is an extremely important aspect of dairy farming, because if you can't process your milk, you might as well dump it. It's got to be done. It's processed. It's made into cheese, dry milk, and anything else they do in the processing end of it. And we felt that this rose to the level of being important enough to provide at least partial funding to remedy the situation in Litchfield with the wastewater situation. And I stand behind the wishes of at least the members of my committee, at least the Republican members, in supporting this allocation to the city of Litchfield or First District to help remedy that situation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Chair Hansen.
You know, we're the first budget bill to come in front of this committee, and, you know, I think the challenges were stated before of neither side is in charge. We have to, I believe, in order to get a budget through at the end of the day, we're going to have to agree. I'm sure there's some things in our ledger that Representative Anderson probably and committee members probably do not want. There's some things on their side of the ledger that I certainly would, if I was in charge, wouldn't do it. But we're not. We're not in that position of being able to say we want to get everything. We negotiated in good faith, and we had the guidance of GOP had 5.3, we had 5.3. And so I look at the benefit of helping with providing food to people, buying directly from farmers, farm to food, that the benefit we got there to help reduce the cuts from the federal government and provide assistance for farmers producing food is an important part. And that's the counter to the 3.1 that was on the GOP side. Would they have agreed to that? Probably not. I don't know for sure, but probably not in that amount. So I'm asking you, and I know we probably will have hard things to swallow in every bill that comes in front of us. And it's not fun, but it's our responsibility. We ran for these jobs. We have that task in front of us. So I'd ask you to support the bill and move it to the floor. I think the debate is a worthwhile debate, and that reform and change is hard. But with that, we have to start this journey. So I'd ask you to support the bill.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen, Chair Anderson, thank you for your work. I appreciate the challenge of coming to agreement, and I recognize this is something that was advanced by the GOP caucus, and it sounds like as part of negotiations there were things that then were secured, some other things that I would support, and so I very much appreciate that. I also, though, appreciate the opportunity to highlight, I mean, this is an issue that kind of has been discussed at various points in the term. It's something that's going to come up with respect to Chair Baker and my bill and other bills as well. I so much appreciate the framing, Chair Gomez, I mean, so much of how you frame things, but in particular just noting that this point, and this is a driver for me when it comes to competitive group grants, the idea that we tell our state agencies to identify policy priorities and direct them to then achieve those priorities and have to figure out the best way to do so, and allowing folks to then come to them so that in this case, it's very likely that there's other wastewater treatment plants that are out there. This one may have been out there for a while. I understand, Chair Anderson, the importance of this. But I just would hope that over time we can be shifting, recognizing this is an agreement, this is settled, but we need to be shifting in a direction to say we're going to tell our agencies, tell the Department of Agriculture, hey, we're going to give you some money to have wastewater treatment programs. And then we're going to allow folks, instead of having to come to the legislature and do this work here, we're going to have them compete with one another. If this is as important as you say, Chair Anderson, then this proposal would, in fact, advance through the process. But there's another thing that I want to highlight, and I guess maybe ask a question about. Folks may remember in 23, we put in, legislature put in many checkpoints so that even if there is a direct appropriation to a nonprofit, there's a pre-award risk assessment that goes through and very extensive when that happens. So much so, in fact, that it tends to take quite a while to get the funds out. And so, for my mind, that's actually not so much a reason to drive for competitive grants, because actually direct appropriations have tons and tons of screening that go in. So maybe a question for staff or for the chairs, will this appropriation receive the same sort of screening that an appropriation to a nonprofit would in the pre-award risk assessment? There's all sorts of checkpoints they have to do, documents to provide. Will this receive the same sort of scrutiny at the agency level that it would if you'd named a nonprofit?
Chair Anderson?
I can try to handle that one, Mr. Chair. We haven't discussed that in particular, but as you mentioned, Chair Pinto, this is on the radar of Department of Ag, milk processors in the legislature. So I have confidence that they aren't just going to give them a blank check and say, here, go do what you want. There's studies being done and particulars that are needed to satisfy the regulations of the pollution control agency folks. So I have every confidence that this will be done in the correct way and done under the scrutiny of the Department of Ag as they hand out this allocation to First District in Litchfield.
Chair, one more item if I can. Sure. I'll just say, and I'm not trying to blow up your agreement, chairs, and I'll maybe just note perhaps it's something that you could look into as this bill makes its way to the floor. I would love to get that information. I guess regardless of the answer, it's partly just an opportunity to highlight that when we do make direct appropriations to nonprofits, which again is something I'd actually like to shift away from, but to recognize that there is quite a lot of scrutiny. And so it'll be interesting to see if this receives that same level. And then I hope that over time we can shift to the kind of prioritization that Chair Gomez was referencing to say we're going to pick goals and then hold our agencies accountable for achieving them. If they do a bad job of funding wastewater treatment plants, let's hold them accountable. That's hard to do if we're choosing individual organizations, including for-profit entities. It looks like maybe Chair Anderson has another answer, Mr. Chair, but thank you.
There's some discussion behind my back, Mr. Chair, just literally. that didn't sound very good, but Mr. Sullivan may have some something to say about how these grants are processed.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, I would just note that all grants, unless the law provides otherwise, are subject to the grants management requirements in Chapter 16B and the policies promulgated by the Department of Administration. And under the pre-award financial risk assessment language that Representative Pinto mentioned, agencies can refuse to award money to what's referred to there as a legislatively named grant. So they would still have the authority to scrutinize and even refuse to award the money if there were problems during that process.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, I'll maybe just note then. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's a good reminder to all of us. And again, as somebody who signed that letter, wants to shift things, and recognizing that all our direct appropriations are subject to that scrutiny, and I hope we'll be making these changes. And again, thank you, Chairs, and thank you, Chair Torkelson.
Representative Watkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank you all for your work. I know it's a very interesting year, and I appreciate the approach you guys took. I did want to thank you, especially Chair Hansen, for the investment that you made to the Farm to School program. Our farmers and our schools greatly depend on that, and with the dramatic cuts to that program by the U.S. Department of Ag and the President Trump's administration, I know you couldn't backfill all of it, but it really does help, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. I did not hear a question there. Any other questions for the chairs of the Ag and Broadband Committee? Closing remarks. Representative Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. Again, this is the agriculture bill, usually the least partisan of any bills that are done here, and we thought this was going to be in that same vein, but we take your suggestion seriously, and we'll look at some of those things. But again, overall, it's an outstanding bill. We were given a very nice target by leadership, and a lot of good things in this bill. Again, some things on either side we may not totally agree with, but over everything overall, it is a good solid ag bill that will help Minnesota and help agriculture in our state.
Chair Hansen.
We have priorities here for food. We have, in case there's an emergency with avian influenza, we have support for that. It's a good balanced bill. We'd ask for your support.
Thank you. Chair Stevenson, anything on closing?
No, thank you. I thank both chairs for their good work on this bill, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that. I would just add the issue that Representative Gomez has pointed out. I thank you for your thorough work and attention to the bill. This issue is one that's been hanging around here for quite some time, many years, actually, and if the Republicans had more control in the past, it probably would have been taken care of a long time ago. So, but thank you for your scrutiny. It's appreciated, and hold our feet to the fire. That's all right. With that, I would also like to thank the chairs for their work. You've made history, gentlemen, the first bipartisan omnibus bill to be passed out of Ways and Means. No blood was shed, and that's thank you for your work. This is not easy work. I know all of those of you that are involved in this work of bipartisan committee work, it's a new environment, and I do appreciate the example you've set. With that, I renew my motion that House File 2446, as amended, be placed on the General Register. I ask that nonpartisan staff may make any technical changes that are necessary to reflect the will of the committee. All those in favor of sending this bill to the General Register, please vote aye.
Aye.
Opposed, by the same sign. The bill is passed and on its way to the General Register. Thank you. Chairs. Yes. Next up is House File 2444, the Omnibus Veterans and Military Affairs Budget Bill. This bill will be is agreed to be a Senate bill as it goes through the process. So we will hear the bill today. We will take comments and questions, and then we will set the bill aside, lay it over until the Senate file arrives. Chair Bliss will be flying solo on this today as Chair Zhang is unavailable to attend the committee. But thank you for being with us, Chair Bliss. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee. Would you like nonpartisan to walk through the spreadsheet of the bill?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I just have a couple of highlights I'd like to point on a bill before we get nonpartisan staff.
That's fine. Chair Bliss.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Chairman. This is the House Veterans Affairs Omnibus Bill. We also are a nonpartisan committee. It doesn't mean we have disagreements, and we hash them out, but we do pride ourselves in historically being nonpartisan. We were given a $5 million target, which was one-tenth of what the agencies had requested, so we've had some pushback a little bit on it. We did prioritize on this bill the ending of veteran suicide. Currently, there's 22 veterans in the United States that kill themselves every year, and that number is not decreasing whatsoever. We have around 100 in Minnesota every year that end their lives. Homelessness has, they've done a great job with homelessness with the Veterans Administration. They brought it down to functional zero. We still need to continue to fund them so they don't lose any ground on that. We've increased funding for veteran food insecurity through the Veterans Meals on Wheels and through the Lutheran Social Services. And we did take the governor's recommendation for Blue Star and Gold Star families. And we have done a pension offset for the Minnesota National Guard members when they're called to active duty. It's a minor adjustment, very cheap, but it's a little something that we can show them. And we did prioritize our funds for the veterans homes to care for veterans. If you remember, in 2018, we built three new veterans homes. And I believe in the 2019 session, we had committed to funding these veterans homes on our portion. $40 million was requested by the agencies over base this year. We were able to get them about $11 million of that, and that's strictly for staffing to get up to full staff. We did compromise with Chair Zhang on the special guerrilla units by not changing the definition of a veteran in the state of Minnesota. We still recognize their service. So that was a nice compromise we made. And with that, we can have the nonpartisan staff walk through it.
Thank you, Chair Bliss. We'll ask nonpartisan to come to the testifiers table. And who would like to go first?
Mr. Chair, I'll start.
Thank you. Ms. Roberts?
Members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff, and I will do a hopefully brief walkthrough through the spreadsheet. You should have two spreadsheets in your package. One is labeled in the left-hand corner, change items only, and the other one is labeled detail. I'm going to walk through the change items spreadsheet, but if you have questions on the detail, just let me know. So starting just to tell you how it's laid out, you can see there's a governor's column and then a set of columns for the House bill for 26, 27, 28, 29. This spreadsheet shows the change from base. So that's everything that you see on here is a change from the base. To begin with, this division funds two different agencies. The first is Department of Military Affairs, also known as the National Guard. And the two change items here, there's $599,000, which is the department's request for their operating adjustment. There's also a change you'll see on line 11 to the Open General Fund for Emergency Services. This is for Representative Olson's bill to add a pension offset for when the guard is called to state active duty. And just to summarize, for the total funding for Department of Military Affairs is $57.9 million for the biennium, and this includes funding for maintenance of their training facilities, enlistment incentives, general support, and emergency services. And then moving on, the second department is the Department of Veterans Affairs, and their total general fund appropriations are $261.9 million. MDVA has two programs. The first is Programs and Services, which has a total general fund appropriation of $60.3 million. And this is the program that funds things such as the homelessness programs, the state soldiers' assistance, the veteran cemeteries, higher education assistance, et cetera. And I'll begin on line 14 or 15 of the change item spreadsheet. You can start to see the changes. And the largest change item here is the $11.6 million adjustment for the veterans' homes. After that, you'll see an increase of $2.2 million for suicide prevention. And then the next line after that, you'll see an adjustment of $10 million in a reduction to the homelessness prevention programs. And the next items are all within Veterans Services Program. The first is $500,000 in an increase to the CORE program. That was Representative Clardy's bill. $120,000 for the biennium for an increase to the County Veterans Service Officers grants, or the CVSO grants. And then $500,000 for the Metro Meals on Wheels. And then after that, you'll see a series of five $1,000 one-time grants for specific legislative initiatives. This includes the Hometown Heroes program, Camp Bliss, Veterans on the Lake, Veteran Mentorship for Black Youth, and then Fishing for Vets. Beneath that, on line 26, you'll see that there's a line that's called Elimination of Direct Grants in the Base. There were two named grants in the base, and the funding has been reallocated in this bill. The first was for Camp Bliss, and the second was for the Veterans Resilience Project. And finally, the last change item you'll see under MDVA is the Veterans of the Secret Guerrilla Units Task Force, which I think the chair had mentioned this provision. It's a $118,000 one time. And the last change item is open general fund change, which is for a provision that allows for education benefits for remarried spouses of deceased veterans to continue. On the last page of the spreadsheet, you'll just see the reconciliation. This division's target was $5 million over the base, so that includes both the direct and open general fund spending, and the total spending for the division is $319.7 million in fiscal year 26-27 and $320.8 million in 28 and 29.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Diebel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jeff Diebel from House Research. I'll begin with a discussion of the Article 2 of the bill, which starts on page 10. Section 1 of Article 2 is from Representative Ray Rauer's House File 1662, which grants access to the Department of Veterans Affairs to the DCYF agency's MAXIS database to confirm eligibility for veterans' homelessness services. Also on Section 10 is the first section of Representative Olson's House File 2338, which provides a pension offset stipend for National Guard service members who are activated to on state active service. Moving to Section 5, which is Sections 2 through 4, I should say, are also from all from Representative Olson's House File 2338. Moving to page 11, Section 5 is Representative Olson's House File 1443, which increases the bonding limit for the State Armory Building Commission. That's a rather long section, so the next provision is on page 14, which is the second piece of Representative Ray Rauer's House File 1622 regarding the MAXIS database. Sections 7 and 8 at the bottom of page 14 are from Chair Bliss's House File 1445, which contains federal conforming changes to our state's veteran burial laws. And that's an agency initiative.
Excuse me, Mr. Diebel, could yes. you just to pull the mic a little bit closer? Some members are having trouble hearing.
Okay. Mr. Chair, on page 15, the Section 9 is the first section from Reverend Cha's House File 1845, which recognizes the service of the residents who were in the secret guerrilla units in the secret war in Laos. Sections 10 and 11, which begin on page 16, are from Chair Bliss's House File 2410, which allows for surviving spouses to remain eligible for education benefits if they remarry. Jumping forward to page 19, section 12 at the top of the page is a provision from the governor's bill, budget bill, that requires Department of Administration to place plaques on the Capitol Mall for gold and blue star families. And then finally, on page 19 is the second section of Representative Cha's bill recognizing veterans of the secret war in Laos, and this is the task force provision of that proposal. Mr. Chair, that concludes an overview of the policy article.
Thank you, Mr. Diebel. Member questions regarding either the spreadsheet or the bill language as reviewed? Representative Mullen.
Can you hear? Did you follow me?
I did.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really having trouble hearing in this room today. I'm not on the Veterans Committee. I've not been on the Veterans Committee before. I know that they do really important work, and I understand the targets that you were given made that work more difficult this year. So I can certainly appreciate that. I also come from a family of veterans. My grandfather was an admiral, and he commanded nuclear submarines. My mom grew up moving all around the country as he was stationed around the country. And my dad was drafted during the Vietnam War. I'll also just note that the Arden Hills training facility for the Army National Guard is also in my district. And again, I can appreciate the target that was given here. I think the thing that is most concerning to me is this decrease for veterans' homelessness. And I think that we can't, as a committee and as the legislature, talk about that in isolation when we're not also looking at the larger picture that's going on federally right now. The Trump administration wants to cut over 80,000 VA workers, and some of those workers process claims, so therefore it's going to take even longer for veterans to get the benefits that they deserve and that they earned serving our country. I'm also worried about the delays and the benefits being delayed and that what that means for homelessness and for suicide for veterans. And I did note, I'm doing my research for this bill, that I understand during the committee, someone from the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans gave specific numbers of veterans who would be made homeless by these changes, saying that it would lead to a doubling of veterans on the state homeless registry, and made the connection between veteran homelessness and suicide, saying the suicide veteran rate is 186% higher among homeless veterans. I also think it's important to know that under the Trump administration cuts, there will be a lot of veterans who will be losing their jobs, both as those workers in the Veterans Administration, and also my understanding is a lot of federal employees are also veterans as well, and they will potentially get cut. So again, while I understand the target and the situation that we're in, I just don't think we can look at that in isolation without also looking at the larger picture of what's happening to our veterans and just feel that that's not right. And just wanted to make that statement. I will be supporting the bill because I think it's important that it gets out of conference onto the House floor, and I hope that we can get a higher target, especially for homelessness, as the bill is in conference committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to ask the author, Representative Bliss, if I heard you correctly, the rationale behind making that cut was because the agency has declared that veteran homelessness is functionally zero at this point?
Yeah.
Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. And, you know, we understand that functional zero does not mean zero homelessness. I don't want to minimize what they've done in the past and the great work they've done to get to functional zero. And that's really helped out our veterans, and we still want them to work with that, and we're not cutting it all the way down. And we would like to prioritize it a little bit more. The problem is that, the suicides have not decreased at all. And I think every one of us has known somebody that's been touched by that. I had a nephew, January 1st of 2022, lost his battle. So it hit home. So we need to do something to help that number. Now, again, you know, veterans homelessness, I know, is important. They've made great strides, and we certainly don't want to cut it or eliminate it. But we felt that there was a time the veteran suicides were just getting $500,000 a year. We thought that that should get a little bit higher priority, so that's what we did. And again, you know, when we look at our veterans, their final tour of duty is to the veterans' homes, and we need to fund those to get them up. And that's what really took priority on our budget. And we were able to get them $11 million out of a $5 million target. And yes, I really do want to see a little bit more in conference, and we'll see where that goes.
Thank you, Chair Bliss. Representative Gomez.
Thank you. So this might be just a question for fiscal. I'm trying to look at the veterans homelessness program starting on line 83. Just from looking at it, we go from a base of 12.7 million per biennium to 2.7 million. Like, so you're cutting it 80%+. Yes, so that's a yes. I am just, I it's hard to express how concerned I am about this. I chaired a division on preventing homelessness in the 21-22 session. And I understand that the Veterans Committee this year received a similar presentation probably to the one that my committee got in 2021. And you know, veterans are disproportionately represented in homelessness, in unsheltered homelessness. If you go to encampments, if you go to places where people living outside, living in places not fit for human habitation live, those are disproportionately veterans. The only reason that we have been able to achieve functional zero veteran homelessness is because of this money. The idea that we've achieved functional zero veteran homelessness, so now it's time to cut the money that got us there, is just really beyond my comprehension. The issue of veteran homelessness obviously it's not unique to our state. It's something that the VA federally and HUD have kind of come together to acknowledge that, you know, this issue, it requires money. It requires federal support. So there are housing vouchers. They're called VASH. And so this is money that comes from the federal government, that comes from the VA and HUD together, and they send money to states that we then use as housing vouchers for vets. And then states like Minnesota, we add additional support on top of that housing voucher, because what is true for most people who are experiencing homelessness is that the house is part of the picture, and then, you know, the human is part of the picture. And so these supportive services that this $10 million per biennium supports are things like referrals to mental health care, referrals to substance use disorder treatment, making sure that when you get a vet inside, they can stay inside. I'm deeply concerned. Obviously, we all, you know, the issue of suicide is... It's terrible to be having a conversation where we're putting these two goals against one another. And I know that we can all agree on that. But I cannot support basically, I mean, this is gutting Minnesota's commitment to ending veteran homelessness. One of the most interesting things that I learned, I didn't know this before I chaired this committee, was that there's this thing called a by name list. And it's, if you talk to jurisdictions that have really gotten, like, figuring out homelessness, that have gotten it right, there's always this by-name list. And the Minnesota VA maintains a by-name list of every single veteran in Minnesota who's experiencing homelessness. They have their name on a list, they know their deal, they know where they're at in the process, they know their history. And that's the kind of attention and intensive case management that it takes to really get somebody inside. And so this is one of those things where it's like, I'm looking at these black and white numbers on this spreadsheet, and I'm seeing these red $5 million a year, and like, this means people who are inside back on the street. This means veterans back on the street. And I can't support a bill that does that, that cuts over 80% of the base funding for this critical program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I appreciate your work on the Veterans Committee, and I know that these are really hard choices, and I just want to shore up the idea that I believe it's an and. Having also recently lost a nephew to suicide, I know how difficult that is for families. So I see this as an and issue. But I reached out in my work on the Legislative Task Force on Aging, homelessness was a big issue. And so I want to just let you know the words of a veteran who I reached out to asking, what does this do, right? I'm not a vet, so I said, what does this do? And the veteran responded, we are extremely worried about this. It's a disgrace that cannot be allowed to happen. I hope there will be talk against this on the House floor. Honestly, I feel the Vets Committee members did not understand what this will do. It will keep staffing out of our new vets' homes and beds empty. Vets will die while waiting for beds. It eliminates all $5 million in funding for homeless programs. Vets will die in the streets. Those are not my words. Those are words of a vet. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to share those words.
Representative Bliss.
Yeah, I just want to respond to that very quickly. The veterans homes are in that, and we did prioritize those in here. And again, we had a $5 million number. We had a $50 million plus ask. I've received the same email that's talking points going around. We did leave some funding at the base, and granted, it's not enough. I understand that. And hopefully we can get a higher number coming out of the conference committee. But at the same time, we need to focus. We need veteran suicide is horrible, and it's not getting any better, and we need to work on that. So we'll see where we get in conference committee. I know that the Senate numbers were much, much higher. I believe they fully funded everything, which would have been nice, but we'll see where it gets. And that is definitely, and you know, veterans will die if they're not put into a veterans home and get the care they need. And we did prioritize that. We gave them $11 million out of a $5 million increase. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. Seeing no other questions from members, any closing remarks, Representative Bliss?
I appreciate it. I know it's a tough pill to swallow, or bill to swallow, whichever you want to say it. But we'll get there, and we do the work for the veterans, and we all are dedicated to that. So thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry to speak after the bill author, but just to say a couple of things, and then if the bill author wants to speak again. There's a couple of good things in this bill. In particular, I am very happy that we're finally recognizing the veterans of the Secret War. I think that is very important. It was, as has been discussed, a very challenging target for this committee. I share the concerns that my colleagues have mentioned about the issue of homelessness. It's really bizarre to hear the rationalization that the program has been so successful that now we get to cut it. I don't think that holds true. I think we're setting ourselves to undo a great success. And I think it's particularly ironic. I received a text from someone who works in this field a moment ago to say, actually, we haven't been certified as having reached zero for veterans homelessness because the folks at the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness that would provide that certification have been placed on leave by DOGE. So we actually haven't even been certified as having reached zero on veteran homelessness because of cuts in this area, and now we're talking about cutting further. The thing that hasn't been mentioned that I'm disappointed that's not included in here is the protections against claim sharks, which I hope that I understand is making movement in the Senate, and I hope that the bill author will consider that in conference. I think our veterans deserve to be protected from that kind of fraudulent activity, and I hope that we can reach some consensus and actually get that included. But thank both co-chairs for working on this bill. I will be a yes today and hope that it will improve further as it goes along.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Any other remarks, Chair Bliss?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Thanks to you and to Chair Zhang for your work on this bill. This bill is laid over. Next, we have House File 2563, the Omnibus Legacy Bill. Chair Vang and Chair McDonald, welcome to the testifiers' podium. Members, this is a bill that will also be awaiting the Senate file, so at the end of today's discussion, we will be laying this bill over. Chair Vang is the lead co-author. I don't know. We have new terms around here. So, Chair Vang, I will move the bill before us for discussion, I guess. It's not really before us. Please go ahead with your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will start with a high overview of the bill, and then I'll defer to my co-chair here to say any final remarks before we have nonpartisan staff go through the spreadsheet, if you would like. So this bill allocates about $779 million in projects in every corner of our great state. Every single district is made better by the work being funded in this bill to protect our lakes, our rivers, groundwater, drinking water, to restore and protect, enhance our habitat, to support our parks and trails, and to preserve our arts and cultural heritage. Legacy has four funds, three of which are biennial and one which is annual. About $163 million is annual spending from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, $304 million from the Clean Water Fund, $130 million from the Parks and Trails Fund, and $180 million from the Arts and Cultural Heritage. Legacy funds are all one-time spending. There is no base or permanent FTEs with legacy dollars. That's part of what makes legacy special, and with each legacy bill, we see new projects and a new focus. And just to go a little bit more in detail of each of the funds, for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, we took the recommendations of the LaSalle Sams Outdoor Heritage Council about 47 projects preserving 107,000 acres of wildlife habitat. And then the Clean Water Fund, $304 million to clean up our waters. These are recommendations from the Clean Water Council and the governor. There are 61 projects and programs being funded in this bill. Much of it go from state agencies to local governments and conservation districts to do work on the ground. With Parks and Trail Fund, $130 million to strengthen our parks and trail systems. This bill follows the longstanding tacit agreement of 40-40-20 split for state parks, DNR, Metro Parks, and the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. This year we have, that's unique this year, is $500,000 in spending on a partnership between our Parks Agency and the Wilderness Inquiry. And then finally, our fourth fund, Arts and Culture Heritage, $180 million. The State Arts Board received its statutory 47%. We work to fund our state agencies and organizations doing good work. We also directed large amounts of money to competitive grant programs rather than direct appropriations to individual organizations and nonprofits. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll defer to my co-chair for any further remarks.
Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, yes, thank you, Chair Vang. This was a really, really good committee to be on. And we, you know, the legacy does a lot of important things in the state. I was a legacy naysayer for 14 years, and I'm a believer now. These funds are very responsibly spent in our state, As you can see, the spreadsheets in front of you, the projects that are in the bill, go to various, as Chair Vang said, various great causes: clean water, parks and trails, outdoor heritage, restoration of our prairie lands and our habitats, and then arts and culture. I'm a believer of this legacy, and I'll probably vote for it in 2033 as long as we continue to be responsible with the taxpayers' dollars. What you have in front of you is a very responsible legacy bill. And you want a picture of Representative Livy? Okay, I'll. As a photographer, I always pose for the camera. We have a very responsible legacy bill, and as Chair Vang had mentioned, we have over $17 million for a grant application that will hopefully have many projects that will be vetted by a group of people that will have the time to do it, to disperse the funds on some great great art projects throughout our state, throughout all 87 counties. So with that, I don't have any closing remarks at this point, because maybe there's some questions, Chair Vang, and I'll refer it back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Chairs. I will bring the nonpartisan staff forward now, Mr. Hagemeyer and Ms. Taylor, to walk through the spreadsheet and the bill. Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer, for the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair, I'm Brad Hagemeyer with the House Fiscal Analysis Department. I will go through the spreadsheet at kind of a higher level, and I think Chair Vang did a great job talking about it already. I don't want to read each line of this here, but the first page, actually the first three pages you'll see, are the Outdoor Heritage Fund. This is the fund that has annual recommendations of the four, and as it was stated, there's no base, so there's no tails numbers to look at, and the recommendations for this particular fund are made from the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council, and they were fully adhered to in this bill. If you look at page 3 on line 117, you'll see the total appropriation is $162,111,000 the first year of the biennium, and just a little bit for the LCC operating budget in the second year, and the rest will be appropriated next year. That was slightly over. Each of the funds is required to have a 5% reserve in statute. It was slightly over that, but you'll see on line 120, there was a cancellation of $120,000 to bring it in line, and then lines 124, 5, and 6 are some projects that are asking for an extension that is required to be in the bill if we want to extend the funds. Those are included, and then line 128 is a cancellation of that funding that won't be used to bring it to the 5% reserve level. If you go to page 4, you will see the start of the Clean Water Fund. And again, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to read each one of these projects. These are what are recommended by the Clean Water Council and the governor's recommendations and have been fully adhered to in the bill that's in front of you. This is a biennial recommendation number. And then if you go to the end of page 5, you'll see the total appropriation is $303,926,000. And then the one addition that was made in the House bill is on page 6, and that is line 221, and that's an extension for Ash River Sanitary Sewer Collection and Treatment System. And the amounts you see listed for the extensions are just the estimate of how much will be extended beyond the current term of the appropriation. And line 223 is the Parks and Trails Fund, and again, as Chair Vang mentioned, this represents the 40-40-20 split that has been historically adhered to for the last 10 years or so. The 40% going to the state parks is on line 221. And again, there's a carve out of that money for wilderness inquiry for a grant. And then line 229 is the amount going for the greater Minnesota parks and trails outside the metro area. That'd be the 20%. And then that's actually slightly higher. It's 41,000 higher from two appropriations that they're asking be canceled and reappropriated to them. The next couple lines are the administrative budget pieces, and then the wilderness inquiry grant out of the greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. On line 233 is the coordination among partners, so the Metro Parks, State Parks, and the greater Minnesota Parks and Trails, in order for them to all work together on projects and make the system a whole, they get appropriation off the top. And then on line 235, you'll see the 40% appropriation for the Metropolitan Council parks, and that mirrors of 40% for the state parks. And then you'll see just a small appropriation on line 240 for the LCC commission website, which is a great website. It has all the projects posted on it. If members aren't aware of that, you can look up any of the legacy-funded projects on there. In total, there is $130,167,000 being appropriated to the Parks and Trails Fund. And then line 251 through 257 are a number of extensions that were asked for on various park and trail projects. And then if you go to page 7, there's a couple of cancellations that I mentioned from previous Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails appropriations in order to make the money stay with their 20% instead of being further divided. And then on line 263 is the start of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Since this one doesn't have a recommendation from anyone or a standing split like the 40-40-20, I'll go through this in a little bit more detail. On line 266 is the State Arts Board, and in statute that's required to receive 47% of the funds. And you'll see that's the only recommendation that the governor makes out of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Lines 267, 68, and 69 are what are being recommended for that 47% from the State Arts Board, excuse me. And then you'll see there's two additional projects added in, creative art, music performances, and productions for $400,000, and then youth literary grants on line 273 for $500,000. In total, there's just over $85 million going to the State Arts Board. On line 275 is the Minnesota Historical Society. There's just under $14 million for statewide historic and cultural grants, $15.5 million for statewide history programs, $5.7 million for history partnerships, and then $750 for both the statewide survey of historical and archaeological sites, and then $750 for the digital library. And then two grants were added in for historical competitive building grants, and that's $1.5 million. And then there's $250,000 for the special guerrilla units, veterans, and families. In total, there's just $38.5 million for the Minnesota Historical Society. There's $6 million to the Department of Education for the regional public libraries. On line 293 is the Department of Admin. There's $2 million for Minnesota Public Radio, $4.1 million for Amherst Public Radio, $9.5 million for Minnesota Public Television. You'll see a blank line for the Wilderness Inquiry Canoe Mobile, which is being funded out of the Parks and Trails Fund. You'll see line 299, there's $3 million for the Como Zoo, $500,000 for the Great Lakes Aquarium, and $150,000 for the Bakken Museum. So $19.25 million going through the Department of Administration. On line 335 is the Minnesota Zoo. There's $2.35 million for the Minnesota Zoo. And if you flip to the last page, the Humanities Center runs a number of grants. You'll see the Humanities Center programs receive $5 million. Then there's $25,000 for outreach on grant opportunities for the Humanities Center. There's $1 million for children's museum grants. And then the pot of money that Chair McDonald is talking about is the $17.5 million on line 355 for community identity and heritage grants. Then of that, there's $1.5 million per year for community festival grants. On line 359, there's $500,000 for ethnic media grants, $200,000 for youth poet laureate grants, $100,000 for Neo Muralismos de Mexico. There's $200,000 for Lundstrom Center for Performing Arts and $350,000 for United Hmong Family. In total, there's just under $25 million going through the Humanities Center. On line 379 is the Indian Affairs Council. In total, there's $2 million being appropriated, and that goes for grants to Minnesota tribal nations to preserve Dakota and Ojibwe languages, Dakota and Ojibwe Indian education and immersion efforts, and then the protection of Indian graves. On line 386 is the Department of Education. There's $1 million for county fairs, and then there's $500,000 for Minnesota Future Farmers of America with a card vote for their 100-year event. Then you'll see the small appropriation for the LCC for the website. In total, there's just under $180 million being appropriated out of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And then line 401, you'll see one extension for a St. Paul cultural art installation from the Laws of 23. That's all I have on the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, Janelle Taylor with House Research. House File 2563 is mostly an appropriation bill. There is one policy section that I'll point out in the first three articles, which are the ones that I cover, and that's page 45, section 13. This section would require the recommendations that the Clean Water Council submits to the legislature to be broken out by fiscal year, not a biennial total. And then I'll turn it over to Ms. Davis. She has a few.
Thank you. Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Chair and members. Mary Davis from House Research. There are just two policy provisions in the arts article. The first one's on page 71, and it's section 12. It adds two new provisions to the statute that deals with arts and cultural heritage grants. And the first part is requiring a recent 990 tax form in order to be a grantee. And the second one is prohibiting the use of arts and cultural heritage funds from capital construction costs, and it does have exceptions for historical site preservation, care collection in museums, accessibility modifications, and exhibits and art installations. The second section is section 13 of the arts article, and it's the one that Mr. Hagemeyer just referenced. It updates a prior appropriation from 2023 for funding for the SUNY Lee statue or memorial or painting, and it just allows those funds to be used into the next financial, into the next fiscal biennium, and it also updates who the funding is going to.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Any questions from members for either any of the nonpartisan? Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was reading through this as quick as I could. Are there any appropriations in here to purchase new land, or is it only to improve the land we currently have?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are a number of appropriations that would allow the acquisition of land in the Outdoor Heritage Fund section.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you happen to know how much money is set aside to purchase additional land?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council staff may have that.
Do we have a volunteer?
A few minutes.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and answer the question.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is Mark Johnson. I'm the executive director for the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Mr. Chair, Senator Rarick, pardon me, Representative Rarick, my apologies. The I don't have the exact figures because I've got a printout from prior to the adjustments that were made at the February forecast. But from a monetary standpoint, for protect and fee with PILT, there is $22,500,000 approximately. For protecting and fee without PILT, that is $16,512. Or pardon me, $16,512,000 approximately. And for protect and easement, there's approximately $44.5 million.
Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Rarick.
I have a different question after that. Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, so they talked about on page 72 that we're going to be now requiring a 990. What are we going to be looking at on the 990?
Ms. Davis.
Chair and members, the requirement would just be that somebody seeking grant funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund would have to have a 990 and present it, but there's no qualification related to that in the current language.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So step one, I guess you need a 990. Step two is you know what you're looking at, and you actually make some decisions based on what you see in the 990. So at least we're making baby steps in the right direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for the nonpartisan staff? Seeing none, we'll bring the chairs back to the testifiers' table. And any questions for the chairs of the Legacy Committee? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the co-chairs for your work on this bill. I do have concerns on line 60.29 and 60.30. This has to do with the famous Litchfield Opera House. And I'm wondering, in the absence of Representative Erdahl being present, how in the world this made it into this bill.
Thank you, Representative Scott.
Chair, I think I can answer that.
Chair McDonald.
Yeah, can I call Representative Erdahl, a former member, and ask him why he yet wants more money? Representative Scott, yes, this is the last request, I'm told, from Representative
Erdahl. You heard it here first, folks.
Yes.
Don't believe it's the last request for this year.
Don't. Represent.
He told me that.
Representatives, please maintain decorum in this committee. Any other questions for the chairs? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, chairs, to both of you for your work. I just want to ask the children's museums. I'd heard some concern about funding relating to that. Do you know? I see that there's $1 million total, $500,000 per year. Do you know how that compares to the past total funding that's gone out to children's museums? Do you happen to know that? I maybe should have asked while the staff was still up.
Representative Chair Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Pintle. To the question regarding the funding amounts of this year compared to last year, it is definitely a cut.
Okay.
Historically, the Children's Museum, various museums, they will probably get direct appropriations, but now it's in a competitive pool of grant, and so and this amount of funding is definitely a cut to what they usually get.
Mr. Hagemeyer, do you want to bring some specifics to this question? Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, it varies a little bit year to year. I think the last biennium is $1.6 million per year.
Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was 1.6? Is that?
I believe that's what he said,
okay.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, Mr. Chair, is 1.6 per year, so it's 3.2 for the biennium.
Thank you. And I think Chair McDonald wanted to say something as well, Mr. Chair.
Chair McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, as you may be aware, and if you're not, I'll let you know, but I think you probably will, that the Department of Revenue had to transfer, I wanted to say confiscate, but I'll say transfer because it's more fair, over $31 million. There was an overpayment from a tax entity for 15 years, so they had to transfer over $31 million from the legacy funds to the Department of Revenue. We were notified, Chair Vang and I, last month. So consequently, having that kind of money, which is significant, as you will probably agree, we had to make some serious concerns and hard decisions, and that was one of them.
Okay. And final, Mr. Chair, told this thing, and so yeah, I totally respect that, Chair McDonald. And so hopefully, as you move to conference, maybe there'll be an opportunity to see what you can do relating to children's museums. Certainly want to support them if we can. And then I just want to make the point more broadly that, and this is praise for the two of you and kind of for all of us, is that I think that this work through legacy funding for our parks, for our trails, for humanities, is such a contrast, and I think we'll end up sort of filling gaps that I think we're seeing coming from the federal government, and I so much appreciate. I know there's major cuts in the National Endowments for the Arts, for our forests and national parks, et cetera, coming down, and we can at least feel really good in our state about the progress being made. And so I thank you so much for your work. This is something we can be very proud of as a Minnesota thing that we've done for many years and continuing this as well. So I'm grateful to you for that kind of counter to the national trend. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Stevenson, any remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to both chairs of the Legacy Committee who did excellent work this year on this bill, and I encourage members to support that excellent work.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Any final remarks, Chair Vang or Chair McDonald, whoever wants to go first?
Thank Chair you, Vang. Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee for their support and consideration. I think Co-Chair McDonald and I have worked well together to reach a compromise and hopefully to make as many members and our stakeholders as happy as possible. So thank you, everyone, for your time.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Chair McDonald.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And my apologies. It's my first visit, I think, to the Ways and Means after 14 years, and I did bring some blueberry muffins, but I left them upstairs on the third floor. So my apologies. We took the letter to heart, chairs, both that you sent us for the earmarks on our bill. So you'll probably notice that. And I think you'll appreciate that that we try to keep a clean bill, as they say around here in the legislature, and not to have it marked with a Christmas tree of earmarks. So I think that's one thing that Chair Vang and I and our committee, we had Chair Representative Lilly and Representative Heinzman on our committee, and I think that's it from this Ways and Means. So we had a really good committee, and I think we have a great bill. As long as the Senate just adopts ours, we'll be in good shape, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you to both of the chairs for your work. If the committee would indulge me for just a moment, since it is Mary Murphy Day, I would note that the legacy amendment passed in 2008, and I was first elected to this body in 2008. And in 2009, I joined the legacy committee for the very first time in its existence. And Mary Murphy happened to be the chair of the first legacy committee, for those of you that may or may not remember that. And true to her demeanor, she would regularly give us homework. She would assign us, for instance, to bring in pictures of our connection with various aspects of the legacy bill and other homework items. So we'll just say that today's bill that's being laid over is also in honor of Representative Mary Murphy. This bill is laid over. Members, that concludes our business for today. We are adjourned.